My name's Patrick, I'm an addict. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Thanks. Right, I'm back. My name's Patrick, I'm an addict. I am somewhere between 5.5 and 6 years clean, and I'm 34 years of age, and that's all my vital statistics, really. I'm from the East End, and I guess I'm just going to keep it very simple tonight and just tell you a little bit of how it was, how I got clean, and how it is today. I sort of just went through the normal progression of using, really, just to move it on quite quickly, you know, just puffing a draw with my friends at the age of 12, and then moving on to acid ease. Then I ended up getting into cocaine and drinking. But the thing that brought me to my knees really quickly was crack. And, you know, I got clean when I was 28. But there was like 3 very dark years between the age of 25 and 28. Which, you know, people talk about yets, and there wasn't very many left for me. I did quite a lot of things that I'm not very proud of. And the main thing I'd say about that time was it was a very, very sort of isolated time. Everyone I used with, and I used with a lot of greedy bastards. But what I found was I seemed to really, among a load of greedy bastards, I always seemed to distinguish myself as the greediest of the lot. And so very soon, everybody seemed to get in my way. So my solution to that was just do it on my own. And that's what my last 3 years of using was like. And I was very psychotic and very lonely and very sad and very helpless, you know. No one could give me any advice. I had all the answers. I was very fortunate, you know. I had some people that cared about me, and they sort of broke into where I was. I had a nice flat, and I guess what had happened was every room was untouched, really. I'd sort of decamped up into the bedroom, and my bedroom was just a bomb site. It was just, you know, the classic, you know, ashtrays everywhere and Stella cans and just all sorts of just shit everywhere and paraphernalia, and you know, that's where I was just in that room. And they said, you know, this can't go on, you know, you've got to go into treatment. And I never knew what a treatment center was, and I packed a tennis racket. So I ended up in a treatment center in Kent, where I spent 5 months. And I was very, very manipulative in there, very sort of, I didn't want to play the game. I just wanted to go there and duck some heat and get back out and do my thing again. But I was very fortunate. I know that now. And slowly over time, you know, maybe a combination of just being clean, getting, you know, a bit of abstinence, and, you know, sitting in group all the time and listening to stuff, it just sort of, the dust settled, really, and I started to hear a message. And I only really got it in sort of the 5th month, really. And then what happened was I realised they was going to send me back down here. So the first 4 months were just fucking about, trying to get off with girls, just pissing around, and, you know, it was summertime, it was nice. And then the last month was sort of like one of them sort of trolley dashes they do in supermarkets, you know, all you can get in 30 seconds. So I'm just like, you know, I started really gorging on sort of the program. And something really clicked, you know. I don't know what it was, and I really can't define it. And I don't really want to question it, because I'm quite happy with the way things worked out. But I just sort of made, what I did was I sort of made a decision, and a decision to go with it and just to hit the ground running when I came back to London. Because underneath it all, you know, I was shit scared of going back out there. Because I truly believe that even in my darkest days, you know, I'd be on that pipe, I'd fucking take it, and I'd sit back and fantasize about being clean, and you know, but with no fucking clue. So here was the chance, you know, fantasizing about that among other things, I would imagine. That's another story for another time, probably a men's meeting, and.
No, sure.
Anyway, you know, so I just made a decision and I stuck with it. And I've done certain things in recovery where I've just debated this and I've debated that. Is it a disease? Is it sort of learnt? At the end of it, I don't give a fuck. I'll just, you know, if it generally it sounds all right, I'll sort of make a decision, go with it, and then there's less flip-flopping down the line. And it sort of stood me in good stead. So I come down to London and, you know, they said, do 90 and 90, get a sponsor. And so what happened was I did two 90 and 90s back to back and I got four temporary sponsors and I just tried to sieve through. But, you know, I didn't even do it. I did everything in a very addictive way. I did my 90 and 90. I thought, right, that's one meeting every day for 90 days. And I thought, all right, hang on a minute, I got a better way. I got a where to find. I thought I could do three meetings on a Monday, three meetings on a Tuesday, one meeting on a Wednesday, and I could have the rest of the week off. Then I got to Thursday and wondered why I felt like shit warmed up. But, you know, I soon figured out how to just pace myself and balance. And how that is key to my recovery, really, is because I'm an extremist. And, you know, my step one, if it's taught me anything, it's that I'm so unmanageable. I'll either not do anything at all or I'll do everything at 180 mile an hour, just completely, you know, because my default setting is that, you know, if you're not on the edge, you're taking up too much space. But what I found out is that, you know, I've got to find that middle way, really, and just get some balance and some pace about things. And things turn out, you know, the outcomes of things are a lot, lot better. So I did a couple of 90 and 90s. And I got four temporary sponsors, and I'll talk a bit about my sponsor. And is there a clock or something?
I'll show you when you've got 5 minutes.
Brilliant. Thanks. And so a bit about my sponsor, really, and how he fits into my life and the what he brings to the table, really, and my experience. And that is that he wouldn't necessarily be someone I would pick to be a friend, you know. And I've never asked him for a job. I've never, you know, he's a step working guide. And the reason I was attracted to him was because he, well, I'll be honest, he was in every meeting that I went to. And, you know, I went to, I would just go to any meeting that was available, really. So if I went to an AA, he was there talking about drinking. And I thought, well, he covers that base. If I went to an NA meeting, he was talking about his drug addiction, and I thought, well, he covers that base. And then I heard him in another meeting talking about how someone only had to wink at him and he was theirs, and I thought, well, he's a bit of a slag as well, so he's got that covered. So I just sort of went, and he also the program seemed to be working in his life. You know, he had his eyes really lit up when he talked, and he was very charismatic, and he looked like he was not only talking the talk, but walking the walk as well. And that was very attractive. So I picked him. But we're from very different walks of life, and we only ever talk about the steps and stuff. And, you know, what he did, well, he took me through the steps, basically. And, yeah. And I guess I'll speed it up a little bit. What he's become for me, especially after reading back my step four to him, was a blueprint for trusting relationships. Because in addiction, I was all things to all people but nothing to no one. Like, I would be your best friend, and, you know, if you had a van coming and you was moving house on Saturday, I'd say, yeah, I'd help you, I'd come and give you an hand. And, you know, come 12 o'clock Saturday, you know, I wouldn't turn up, I'd be face down somewhere, and you know, I'd let down everybody, you know, but I'd promise you the world and fuck you over. Because, you know, I was all things to all people and nothing to no one, because I really wanted people to like me. What I've learned in recovery is that I don't really have to like everybody, and not everybody has to like me. And through doing the steps with him and getting all the awareness that they give you, I'm just comfortable now with a support network. And that just involves my sponsor, trust him implicitly. He's the one person who knows everything about me, all the dirty secrets I thought I'd take to the grave. I got a few people in the rooms who I sort of run things by, and I trust their opinion. You know, mum's back in my life, she's another person, and my girlfriend, and that's it, really, and I'm content completely content with it, and I love my lot in life. I'm a very happy camper, and I guess, is that about it really? Shall I try and draw it out a little bit longer?
Okay, a couple of minutes.
Should we go back to my fantasies? No, I don't know about that. Yeah, that's it really. I just plod along. Everything's going really well. You know, I do a little bit of maintenance. I'm very fortunate. I've got a couple of sponsees, and I've just been in the process of listening to a sponsee step four. And it's affected me like no other step four I've ever done with a sponsee, because because I caught him skimming on his childhood, and I was like, well, I sort of pushed it a little bit, and because I know they were such a turning point in my things. You know, something happened to me when I was 12, and that was pretty much where I shut down, as in many, many ways, you know. And I stopped. I had 16 years of addiction, of active addiction. And for the most part, I was a 12-year-old until the age of 28. And it's only now, you know, 6 years in almost, that I'm starting to become a man and actually play catch-up. And I'm actually, through the program, doing quite well. I'm a lot more grown up and responsible than every other fucker in my life right now, that's for sure. So, yeah, I guess that's it, really. Can I leave it there now?
Yeah,
thank you very much.